touch Mike gently. I hope I did that right. There's a note up here. Well, happy Sabbath, everyone. Beautiful day, and it's so nice to see all of you again. Don't get over here too often, but sure enjoy the fellowship and the trip over. That's kind of not so good, but we made it. Well, Passover and unleavened bread are rapidly approaching. So what's the best topic that you could speak on that day? Something that's pertinent to the feast and the things that went on. I mean, we speak of deliverance, freedom, salvation. All those would be good topics. But there's something that preceded that that is very important. And actually, I want to talk to you about those things, but it's a rather sensitive subject. But before I do, let me tell you a short story. And that is one time we took a trip out to Lake Tahoe, stopped at Reno. We were on Amtrak. We boarded in Omaha, took Amtrak out to Tahoe and rented a car. And it was kind of a fun trip. Of course, I come from a line of railroad people. My grandfather, my dad, my grandfather, and my great-grandfather all worked on the Illinois Central Railroad. Brother worked there for a while, too. But it was an interesting thing. Railroads have always intrigued me. And, of course, my grandfather was a conductor, and my great-grandfather was a conductor. A conductor is one who, like the captain of a ship, he rules the train. Well, this conductor we had on our trip out to Lake Tahoe was kind of a short guy, really nice guy. We had struck up a conversation with him, and I don't know how it drifted around, but he got on the subject of trains being late. And he said, yeah. He said, in Chicago, Union Station, I've been there a couple times. He says, as you walk in, I don't remember seeing it, but he said, you walk in, there's a big sign overhead. Your train is late. Deal with it. And I always remember that. It was just funny the way he said it and everything, and it's kind of true. Now to the core of the matter. What led up to the Exodus? Well, if it were not for slavery and bondage, there would be no need for deliverance or freedom. Interesting, isn't it? I have put together a lot of interesting questions about slavery. Now let's pursue the answers using history and the Bible to keep us online as we research this, to find out what is God's counsel about that subject. The purpose here is to understand it. Not to condemn it, not to justify it, but to explain it and our position in it. Isaiah 1 verse 26, if you want to turn there. What is the definition of slavery? And I gave this quite a bit of thought. This is what I came up with. Slavery is a social economic system which persons known as slaves are deprived of or relinquish personal freedom and are forced or voluntarily submit to a master or masters. That's the definition of slavery. Throughout history, slavery has either been political, it's been fraught with legal issues, moral issues, or all three of the above. As a political issue, at times, it's been used for personal advantage or economic advantage or political advantage. Well, where's the truth? God's word, his laws, are truth, but few know it, and that includes rulers and masters. There are rules of slavery, and mastery. So remember that. Slavery is and was and will be a fact of life. It is a fact of life. And it was designed to be regulated by laws and judges. How are we doing? Not very well, I'm afraid. Never have. Not doing a very good job now. Because we lack, we have a bad shortage of righteous laws and judges and teachers and legislators and kings. But fortunately, in Isaiah 1 verse 26, he says, "And I will restore thy judges as the first." They will be righteous judges at that time. "And thy counselors as at the beginning. Afterward, you shall be called the city of righteousness and the faithful city. Zion shall be redeemed." And I'm going to emphasize a lot of words today that are very important. They all fit in this subject. "They shall be redeemed, delivered with judgment, and her converts with righteousness." Important words. So what can we learn about this subject today to enhance our understanding? Turn over to Samuel 18, verse 11. What are the different types of slavery? Suppose you're an involuntary slave, which is the way we commonly think of it today. There are many ways that that could happen. You may have been a captive or purchased or enslaved because of a crime you committed. Or you were a prisoner of war. In Fort Dodge, Iowa, where I lived, there was a beautiful brick stadium, sports stadium. And it was built by German slaves, captive slaves of war. I think technically that's illegal, as you refer to the Geneva Convention, the rules of war. Are there rules of war? That's crazy. But anyway, they built this thing. It was all built by German laborers. There may have been some Italians in there too. But there's some interesting facts about slavery. The total number of European immigrants to all 13 colonies before 1775 was about 500,000. Of these, 55,000 were involuntary prisoners. An additional 300,000 were enslaved Africans. Now, we can assume that they were probably involuntary. They had no choice. They were sold and brought over here as laborers. But you might also have been a voluntary slave by choice. There are two types of voluntary slaves. Number one, perhaps you were a contractual slave, and that is also called an indentured slave or a debt-bonded slave. Of the 500,000 or so European arrivals to this country, most were Germans and Britons who came voluntarily. A man, a historian by the name of Tallon, said, and he was an historian, he estimates that 48% were indentured. Half of the people who came over here from Britain and Germany were indentured. They were debt-bonded. They worked about 3 years to pay for their passage over here. In other words, for an agreement for their freedom of passage over here, they had to work 3 years as a slave. That was an average. The second type of voluntary slave were voluntary or servant. That is an agreeable service or servitude. That could include military service or your job. You are a slave to your master, your employer. That's voluntary, of course. But many of people are taken advantage of, even in those voluntary situations. They had the make a living for them and their families, so they agreed to work for this person for a low, very low wage, an unlivable wage, or a very high wage, which happened occasionally, not very often. It kind of goes back to what Tennessee Ernie Ford said in his song about 16 tons. He speaks of it there when he said to the coal miners, "I owe my soul to the company stove." Well, the employer would hire these people. They had to buy their stuff from the company stove at probably slightly inflated prices. And then they had to keep working to pay the bills that they incurred at the company stove. Samuel 18, verse 11, goes into some ancient history about this. And he said, "This will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself and for his chariots and to be his horsemen. And some shall run before his chariots." Sounds like a military draft to me. If it was a voluntary draft or enlistment, there would be voluntary slavery. If it was a drafted, then you would be involuntary. "And he will appoint him captains over thousands and captains over 50, and will set them to ear his ground, and to reap his harvest, and to make his instruments of war and instruments of his chariots. And he will take your daughters to be confectionaries, and cooks and bakers. And he will take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servants," his slaves. Interesting. So we have a hierarchy of slavery going on. "And he will take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give to his officers and to his servants." So his servants' servants are going to take a piece of the pie. Sounds like the IRS, doesn't it? Don't you wish it was only 10%, though? I think today it's probably running 30, 40%. You know, what time you figure all the 10 and 20 of different types of taxes. "And he will take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to work." So even you had men servants and maid servants who the government took over. "And he will take the tenth of your sheep, and you shall be his servants, and you shall cry out in that day because of your king which ye have chosen, you and the Lord. He will not hear you in that day because you've rejected him." The people rejected God, their true master, the good master. And they wanted a king to rule over them. How's this working for us? Would you call that voluntary or involuntary slavery? Maybe just stupidity. You get a good slave, but it's never good enough. Or you get a good master, it's just never good enough. The history of slavery. When did it begin, and who had slaves? Here are some historical statements that I thought were rather interesting. One thought is that it began in Mesopotamia when people began to own land and live in cities and develop technology. It's pure speculation, but I wondered if it may have begun with Nimrod or even Cain. Cain was the founder of the first known city, first recorded city. Some statistics I found interesting were that slaves in Athens, Greece consisted of approximately 20,000 freemen. And get this now, 20,000 people who were free, masters maybe, and 400,000 slaves. Wow. And in the Roman Empire, as many as 25% of the empire's population and 30 to 40% of the population of Italy were slaves. Some slave nations were Israel, remember Pharaoh? Italians, Chinese, Irish, Romans, Greeks, Germans, Britons, Celts, Jews, Arabs, Africans, Indians, Muslims, Christians, and many more slaves were used not only for labor but for amusement, as in the Colosseum as gladiators and so on. But many became successful in business, family, politics, whatever it might be, government. But did you know, not only were those people slaves, but at one time or another, many slaves became slave owners. One report said the first slave owner in the U.S. was a black man. Another historical perspective said that in ancient Persia, the situation and lives of slaves could be better than those of the average citizen. Could be. Who knows how often that happened? Israelites were slaves, and they had slaves. Some were even fellow Israelites. Jeremiah 34, for one example. There's a lot of examples of that. Some even became prominent, like Joseph, who was sold into slavery, but became great. The number one man under Pharaoh in all of Egypt, in charge of the whole nation, a slave. Boy, if you read that history again, it's amazing. Here's just a partial list, and there's a long list of some slaves who became successful. They overcame their position. Aesop, the Greek poet in the 6th century B.C., he's the author of, or transcriber of, Aesop's Fables. There were two popes, Calixtus and Clement, who were slaves, became popes. Edmund Flint, a black enslaved by the Choctaw Nation Indians, who described slavery as very like the slavery among whites. Elijah Abel, born in Maryland as a slave, was believed to have escaped slavery, fled to Canada, where he joined the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints and became among the first blacks to receive its priesthood and the first black to rise to the rank of an elder. Which was interesting because I had always been taught that the Latter-day Saints were very racist and didn't allow blacks even in. I don't know where I heard that, but obviously false. Epictetus, about the 1st century A.D., he was an ancient Greek Stoic philosopher, was a slave at one time. Marcus Agrippa, a slave of the 3rd century, who not only got free, but was eventually elevated to the senatorial rank by Macrinus. Here's one you'll know, I think. Miguel de Cervantes, late 16th century. He's the author of Don Quixote de La Mancha. He was captured by the Barbary pirates, spent 5 years as a slave and property of the Viceroy of Algiers, the man of La Mancha. And then there was, of course, Joseph, who became ruler over all of Egypt. Now we know about Israel being captive slaves in Egypt. They served under very harsh and oppressive masters. How bad was it when we, our ancestors, were slaves in Israel, or in Egypt? Exodus 1, verse 11. Therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they applied and multiplied and grew. And they were grieved because of the children of Israel. And the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor. I couldn't find a better word to use here than rigor. And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and in brick. Boy, bricklayers got a tough life. I've done a little of it. That was enough. And in all manner of service in the field, all their service when they made them serve was with rigor. And Pharaoh charged all the people, in verse 22, saying, every son that is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. How bad was it? It was really bad. But only 1 month after they crossed the sea, they wanted to go back. Why? To the flesh pots and the bread and the leeks and the melons, all the good things they had to eat. That was better, more important to them than the slavery they came out of. It was more important than the fact that their firstborn sons were being killed. Just because of their bellies. Think of that. Is either slavery or slave ownership good or bad? Intrinsically, it's neither. It's not good or bad. It is a fact of life in one form or another, voluntary or involuntary. Sometimes God allows or causes people to go into slavery for their own correction, punishment, protection as a place of safety, or for a season until they learn something that they're supposed to learn. Sometimes their leaders or masters, which is a type of father, were stern or kind or beneficent or loving or oppressive, sometimes downright evil. There may even be a time or circumstance when it's justifiable morally and legally to attempt to flee. We'll address that a little later in the scripture. But the rule of thumb is, just as in Israel, it is always advisable to wait on God for deliverance. Seek your deliverance from God first. If your train is late, you got to deal with it. All forms of slavery could be just or unjust, beneficent or oppressive, ethical or unethical, honorable or evil. Usually the worst. The slavery of Judaism was not the cruel system, or at least it was not designed to be the cruel system of most contemporary nations, but it was, like most laws, often ignored or not applied according to civil or biblical principles, laws. The train is late. Everybody wants to be the boss, the master. I've had many, many, many bosses. Most of them were pretty good, but some of them, I could do a better job than he's doing. Maybe that was just grandiose thinking, but as Hamilcar said to Hannibal, he said, "Of all my sons, he will be a great general because of all my soldiers, he best knows how to obey." Another key word. He best knows how to obey, so he will be going from a slave or a servant in a position to his father, as a leader. James said, "Be you not many masters or teachers." Maybe we can learn something more by being in a position of slavery or submission. Submission, another good word. His point being one of humility. Learn to serve before you learn to rule. Isn't that what we're doing now, or should be doing? And learn before you speak. Turn over to 1 Corinthians 7, verse 20. You want to mark that? We'll be coming back to Corinthians. Ample scriptures allow mastery and slavery. They allow it. It regulates it very strictly, and it even supports it. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 20 to 24. "Let every man abide in the same calling wherein he was called." So if you're called to be a master or a slave, stick with it. "Are you called being a servant, a slave? Care not for it." In other words, don't fret about it. Don't get uptight. Don't get excited. Your train is late. It'll be arriving sooner or later. "But if you may have the opportunity by whatever means to be made free, use it." Take advantage of it. You know, if your master says, you know, you're free, go ahead. Go ahead and go. "For he that is called in the Lord, being a servant, is the Lord's free man. Likewise also, he that is called, being free, is Christ's servant. You are bought with a price. Be not ye the servants of men. Brethren, let every man wherein he is called, therein abide with God. Be content." Contentment is a great quality. Very hard to do sometimes. I'm speaking today as a former slave of sorts. Not necessarily always a perfect submissive slave to my master, my employer. But now I'm a free man, a freed man. And yet under a new master. So I'm still under slavery. For an assignment, I like to give assignments. See Albert Barnes' commentary on 1 Corinthians 7:21. Some people just have a way with words and wow, it's amazing. He does an excellent job as he addresses the conflict here between slavery and mastery, and he clarifies it perfectly. Albert Barnes, 1 Corinthians 7:21. Turn over to Psalm 62, verse 9. "So is either mastery or slavery a predictor of success or failure, or is it an advantage or disadvantage?" Well, things can swing either way. A lot of times, it's your attitude toward the position you're in. But know this, that God rules in the hearts and lives of men, yours, whether a master or a slave. Surely, Psalm 62:9, "Surely men of low degree," that's slaves, are vanity. Wow. That takes the wind out of your sails. And men of high degree, masters, are great? No, they are a lie. To be laid in the balance, put them one on side of the balance scales, they're the same. They're altogether lighter than vanity. Verse 10, trust not in oppression and become not vain in robbery. If riches increase, set not your heart upon them. God has spoken once. Twice have I heard this, that power belongs unto God. It seems it all depends on what you do in whatever situation you're in. Timing is everything. Your train may be late, but remember, God invented time and put you in it where and when you need to be for his purposes. So what's to fret about? Should we be content where we're at? Another assignment there, read John Gill's commentary on 62 verse 9 about a man of high degree and low degree. Boy, does that clarify things. Regardless of your position, always remember this. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. Faith that you're going to be delivered from your situation. Faith that somehow you'll learn how to, you know, appreciate what you have and to appreciate the advancements that you receive. For he that comes to God must believe that he is, and he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. No matter what position you're in, seek God. Hebrews 11:6. What are the laws of slavery? There are so many. Look in the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. It's huge. There are so many laws, biblical laws, not besides the one that man has made, that deal and regulate slavery. Never followed, very seldom at least. But here's one difficult example, just to give you an example of what you can learn. Selling your own child of slavery is permitted in Scripture. What? How do you explain that? The only explanation I can think of is that it was for the well-being of the child. Now, this is far out, I agree. Or to get yourself out of debt. Perhaps you've gotten yourself into such a mess you can't get out of. Or some other imaginable difficulty, a horrible sickness or something. Suppose you were by some catastrophe, whether man-made or natural, or your own malfeasance, or even God-ordained, you're unable to support or care for that child. That'd be an extreme example, but there's the situation. Perhaps it would be the only way out of your situation. Even so, the child was to be released after the end of that seven-year period. It's the year of release. That's also in Jeremiah 34. A good list of all the biblical laws can be found in that ISBE. Of course, all these laws were usually ignored, overlooked, forgotten, for whatever reason, because we don't like laws. Proverbs 19, verse 10. Can a slave or master produce success or failure? We reviewed some groups who had been slaves in a conversation one time and that had become successful. They overcame their station in life to become successful. Some even became philosophers, reformers, politicians, inventors, and sometimes criminals. Can a slave become a master? History says yes. Remember Joseph, sold into slavery, became the master of all Egypt. However, that's a rare exception when a slave becomes a good master, because oftentimes, and I've seen this, and even Proverbs 19, verse 10 has seen it. Because sometimes the slave put into a position of power becomes the harshest of taskmasters. Solomon observed in Proverbs 19:10, delight is not seemly for a fool, much less for a servant to have rule over princes. Normally it's not a good thing until the servant has really learned how to serve, as in the case of Hamilcar and Hannibal. Romans 6, verse 16, are you a master or a slave? Then there are the self-employed who have the worst masters of all. Any of you self-employed? That's a joke. Okay. Romans 6, 16. Know you not that to whom you yield yourselves, the voluntary, yourselves servants to obey? His servants you are to whom you obey. Now the choice is yours. You can choose one or the other, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness. Two great words. But God be thanked that you were the servants of sin, no longer, but you were. But you have obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered to you. You learn to obey the law. Most people don't even read it, have never read it, much less obey it. Being then made free from sin, you became the servants of righteousness. Okay, you don't have to pretend you're a slave anymore. You are. You're not a supreme ruler or master yet. That will come in the resurrection. So your train is late. How are you going to deal with it? It's not easy to be a slave of righteousness. I'll bet you didn't know that. It requires a great deal of knowledge, a knowledge of the law, about your attitude, what you're thinking. It takes a lot of effort and help to be a good slave. You might want to read 1 Timothy 6, verse 1 to 8. I won't take the time here, but that is pivotal. This whole split sermon revolves around that set of verses. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26 to 29. Some are masters, but most people are slaves. Which are you? 1 Corinthians 1, 26. For you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, that is powerful and capable people, are called. Not many noble, that is well-born. In other words, you're born with a silver spoon in your mouth. You're high ranking. You've had advantages all your life. Not many of those are in the church. They would be the masters. Now, here's a description of us slaves when we were called. But God, verse 27, but God has chosen the foolish. I'm going to fill in these words like they would in the Amplified Bible. Foolish. What's foolish? Dull, stupid, blockhead, the Charlie Browns of the world. Things of the world to confound the wise, and God has chosen the weak without strength, either physically or morally. Things of the world to confound the things which are mighty and base. A base person is a person without proper upbringing. Maybe we didn't have perfect fathers. Maybe we did things wrong. Maybe our fathers were headed in totally the wrong direction. But we didn't have that. Most of us had some tough upbringing. But some of us became rather successful despite that situation. And the things which are despised, God has chosen, and yea, the things which are not. Things that are, we are dismissed. Dis is dissed, as they say today. Now, we're not regarded as knowing anything. The apostles were ignorant and foolish men, stupid. To bring to naught the things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence, makes us feel small. There are three pilings under the platform of righteousness. You are here, sitting on his platform. That platform is pretty level because it's standing on three pillars. Those pillars are, let me get it in right order here. Because there is a proper order, I think, in order of importance. Okay, humility, submission, and obedience. Now, why are those three alike? They're joined at the hip, a little bit different in application and meaning, but they are three pillars that rest on a foundation. That foundation is the rock. That's Jesus Christ. What happens if one of those pillars is a little weak or short? What happens? That platform tilts and you tend to slide off. That's a very important thing. Humility, submission, and obedience. And I think in that order of importance or sequence. I'll say it. Now, all three of those things are counter to human nature. Just think about it. When you mention, oh, maybe humility, people can, you know, understand that, yeah, I got to put myself down, you know, things like that. But submission and obedience, nobody's going to tell me what to do. It just raises the hackles on the back of some people's neck. Submit? Come on. There's no way I'm going to submit to you or you. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. I'm a law unto myself. So some would feel about their predicament, they're just using me. You know, somebody's using me. I'm not going to submit to them. They're using me. Well, then at least you're good for something. Jesus was a servant, a slave to the Father. Think about it. And he had all those three core characteristics. He had a lot more good characteristics too. But I just try to put things in order the way my mind works. You know, the rock, the three pillars, the platform. The platform is godliness and righteousness. And that's what we have to rely upon. Godliness and righteousness. Otherwise, we're going to slip off. Okay, Jesus was a subject, a servant, a slave to the Father. And those three pillars are the foundation of his character. And the Father used him. The Father used it. He was used. That's a horrible thing, to be used, isn't it? Well, the Father used him to bring many sons to glory. For our benefit, he became a slave to death. So we must also have those characteristics of humility, submission, and obedience to be like him. Knowing that, I believe we can better understand Paul's instructions in 1 Timothy 6, verse 1 to 6. That's your assignment. We are not yet kings and priests. Our train is late. Let's just deal with it, be content with the position we're in, and work at the great honor and glory that is to be given to us.